ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13. Nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. Text number 8 through 12. Okay, since we're only doing four texts, maybe we can do a responsive chant. So please repeat after me.
Amanitvam adambhitvam
Amanitvam adambhitvam
Ahimsa shantirajavam
Ahimsa shantirajavam
Acharyopasanam shocham
Acharyopasanam shocham
Sthairyam atma vinigraha
Sthairyam atma vinigraha
Indriyartheshu vairagyam
Indriyartheshu vairagyam
Ahankara eva cha
Ahankara eva cha
Janma mrityu jara vyadhi
Janma mrityu jara vyadhi
Dukha doshanu darshanam
Dukha doshanu darshanam
Asaktirana vishvanga
Asaktirana vishvanga
Putra dara vihadishu
Putra dara vihadishu
Nityam ja samachittatvam
Nityam ja samachittatvam
Nishta nishtopapattishu
Nishta nishtopapattishu
Vaijananya yogena
Vaijananya yogena
Bhaktiravya vicharini
Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever they may be, is ignorance.
Om Jnanati Virantasya Jnananjana Shalabhaya Chakshurum Vitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pampumam Vyati Girim Yakripatam Aham Vande Shri Gurum Dina Kalam Paramananda Madhavam.
So, my father said that last time you covered the first paragraph of the purport and the topic of accepting the spiritual master? Yeah?
I have jumped.
You jumped to the spiritual master paragraph. Right?
Yeah.
Yes, that is it.
Thank you. simplicity type. Okay, so in these verses, Krishna is giving a comprehensive definition of what knowledge is. We were just discussing this recently when Hanuman Swami gave a class at Boise State University, a philosophy class, Introduction to Philosophy. So this topic of knowledge came up, what is knowledge? And here Krishna is giving a comprehensive definition of knowledge. What is knowledge? Krishna's being very bold. He's not displaying any humility. Since he's not saying that knowledge is a very difficult thing to know. We think that this is knowledge, and perhaps it is, and perhaps it isn't. And knowledge is search for the truth, and one day you may come there, you may not come there. The knowledge is all about the journey, not about the destination. You know, all these ideas, broad-minded ideas we have about knowledge. Krishna's not beating around the bush, he's not mincing any words. He's not being very broad, or he's being very straightforward and very mechanical about it. He's saying, you don't want to know what knowledge is? Well, I've got a list for you here. There's 20 items here, and all these items, this is knowledge. Very clear, it says last line of the verse, etat jnana. This is knowledge. Etat jnana. This is knowledge. And agyanam yad atonyatha. And anything else, anyatha, besides this, this is agyan, ignorance. In other words, in order for it to be knowledge, it has to be in this list. And anything that's not on this list is not knowledge. Right? So it's a in philosophy this is called it's a bi-directional syllogism, that this is knowledge if and only if it's on this list. Right? Means if it's on this list, it's knowledge, and if it's knowledge, it's on this list. Both directions, right? If knowledge, then on this list. If on this list, then knowledge. Which is the strongest type of equivalence you can get in logic, is when it runs both directions like this. In other words, this is a necessary and sufficient condition for being knowledge. It's necessary for it to be knowledge, and it's sufficient also. There's nothing more besides this. And Krishna, he's like this, he's very bold like this. Other places in the Gita also, he's like this. Krishna says another verse, I forget which chapter it is, he says, what I'm giving you here is the highest knowledge, and once you know this, there's nothing more to be known. Again, very bold thing. He says, not that, knowledge is unlimited, and we're always looking and we're always learning, and not like that. He said, I'm giving you here the highest truth, and there's nothing more to be known beyond this. So, Krishna's approach is very, very strong, very direct. And he's justified in this approach. He's justified speaking like this. Why? Because he's the absolute truth. Right? Krishna himself is the absolute truth. So he is completely justified in speaking absolutely. Right? He's the only one on the planet who can give us a comprehensive and a sufficient list of what knowledge is. If we try to do the same thing, we will be considered arrogant and ignorant, basically. How do you know what knowledge is? How do you know what knowledge is? But Krishna, because he's God, God is the only one who can give us rundown of this. This is knowledge. He can say, this is reality, this is falsehood. Why? Because he himself is the absolute truth. Satyam param dhimahi. Dhamna svena sada nirastha kuhakam. Satyam param dhimahi. The first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam says, let us meditate on that supreme absolute truth, satyam param dhimahi. Who? Dhamna svena sada nirastha kuhakam. By his own effulgence, by his own brilliance, he completely destroys nirastha kuhakam, all illusion, all falsehood, all unreality. So the very nature of God is such that he is the absolute truth. So for Krishna to come up with a list like this is not at all difficult. Now, last time you read in the first paragraph of this purport, Srila Prabhupada was highlighting one out of this list of 20. I think there's 20. Okay, in this list of 24, there's Prabhupada highlighted.
No, you're right. This is
I think someplace in the proper Prabhupada says the other 19, 20. Okay, in this list, Srila Prabhupada highlights one of these items of knowledge as the most important, upon which all the others depend. Which item is that? One of the 20 is most important.
Acquiring spiritual wisdom?
No.
Humility?
An unalloyed devotion to me?
Unalloyed devotion. This, in verse number 11, so it means 8, 9, 10, 11, the fourth verse, the first line of that. Mai jananya yogena bhaktir avyavicharini, which in the translation is constant and unalloyed devotion to me. Bhaktir avyavicharini. Ananya yogena bhaktir avyavicharini. It says bhakti, devotion, that it has two qualities to it. Right? Two major qualities. What are the two qualities Krishna says this devotion must have? This is just review from last time.
Constant.
It must be constant and?
Unalloyed.
Unalloyed. Okay. What does unalloyed mean?
Pure.
Pure meaning?
No desires.
Yeah. In what sense?
Not expecting anything in return.
Not expecting anything in return. So pure in the sense, the pure motivation. That the only motivation you have is for bhakti. For devotion. And not anything else. You're not going to Krishna for some material progress or anything like that. You know, personal gain. Only for love. Only because you love Krishna. So that's unalloyed. And constant, of course, means avyavicharini. It means it doesn't move, it doesn't waver. Not that sometimes you're in a good mood, you worship Krishna, you do your sadhana, and sometimes you're not in a good mood, sometimes you're not feeling very devotional, so you don't. Not like that. So, two qualities that happen. And from previous classes, those who've been coming for some time, you will recognize that everywhere these two qualities are described as part of the definition of what pure devotion is. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a famous verse, Savai Pumsan Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Radhokshati Ahaituk Yapratihata Yayatma Suprasidhati, which also gives a definition of pure bhakti. Bhakti Radhokshati. What is that? Ahaituki and Apratihata. Two qualities. Ahaituki means same as here, ananya. Unalloyed. It has no other goal in mind. And this word ananya is very nice. Anya in Sanskrit means another. Ananya means not another. So that devotion which does not have any other object. So you're worshipping Krishna, but your mind is set on another object. You're worshipping Krishna for a new car. So there's anya, there's something else there, ananya. So ananya means without any other goal in mind, means ahetuki. So Bhagavad says ahetuki and apratihata, means unbroken. And this is the same as avyavicharini, unfaltering. Same thing, anya bhlashita shunyam khyanakam. Every definition of bhakti you'll find, everywhere, any place you'll find. Also in earlier Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham mithya bhyuktanam yoga kshema vahamya. This was in chapter 9. Right. He says, he describes bhakti there also, what devotion his devotees have. He says, Ananyas chintayanto mam, they're worshipping me, thinking of me, ananya, same word here, unalloyed, without any other object. Tesham nitya vyuktan, and they're always engaged, nitya, eternal, constantly. So everywhere you find these two qualities of devotion, unalloyed and constant. So Prabhupada is saying this here is the most important quality, most important item of knowledge out of 20. Why is it the most important? He gave the reasons in the purport.
Because that work can help you to develop other qualities.
Yes, exactly. All the other qualities automatically flow from this one. Because this quality is actually the goal. This is where we're heading. So of these 20 items of knowledge, this is the ultimate goal, bhakti ravya vichara. Unalloyed, unmotivated and uninterrupted devotion to the Supreme. This is the goal of all knowledge. Krishna confirms this in chapter 11 and Gita also, chapter 15. Vedaisha sarvai ahameva vedyo vedantakrit vedavit evacha. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Krishna says, I am the compiler of the Vedas. Everything, all knowledge, remembrance, forgetting, comes from me. So, Krishna is the goal of knowledge. Therefore, devotion to Krishna is the ultimate goal for all of us. Therefore, anyone who cultivates this devotion for him, all the other good qualities are naturally present. Okay, so this is why it's considered the...
Tesham
Satta Yuktanam. Yes. Tesham Satta Yuktanam Bhajatam Dadami Buddhi Yogam. Krishna says, this is in the Chatushroki Gita, chapter 10. Krishna says, one who is always engaged in devotional service to me, Tesham Nitya, Dadami Buddhi Yogam. I give him the knowledge by which he can come to me. So again, Krishna is confirming that. It's a very nice confirmation. Krishna again confirms that you have devotion to me and all the knowledge you need will automatically come to you. So that's therefore Prabhupada talks about that the first. It's not the first on the list, but Prabhupada talks about it the first because it's the source of all the other qualities. And the main means, that's the goal, unalloyed devotion. And the main means of achieving that goal, he says, is through accepting the spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master. So it's very nice. Right at the beginning, in case someone's not so patient to read the whole purport, right? So many pages, then Prabhupada highlights the basic what you need to know. The ultimate goal and the main way to get there. Ultimate goal is pure devotion, and the main way to get there is by accepting the spiritual master. Okay, now the other 18. The purport is quite long. So, does anyone have a quality they'd like to focus on today? Any one particular quality that you want to hear about or discuss?
No.
I knew Darlene would say that. Human being. Okay, that makes perfect sense. It's number one on the list. Okay, so this is paragraph number two on page 574. Paragraph two is the purport. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he goes one paragraph or sometimes half a paragraph for each one of the qualities. Very nicely goes to each one. It's very, it's not insignificant. It is very relevant that the first item on the list that Krishna talks about is humility. And in fact, he repeats it twice. just to make sure that we don't miss it. It says, Amayatvam Adambhutvam. The first one, Prabhupada translates as humility, and the second one,
pridelessness.
Basically the same thing. So Krishna mentions it first, and he mentions it twice. In other words, it is very, very important. For someone aspiring to be a devotee of the Lord, humility is the most important quality that we can cultivate. You can say at least one of the most important. Compassion comes very close as another, almost on the same level, humility, compassion. Can you guess or come up with some reasons? Why is humility given as quality number one? Why is it so crucial?
We teach it. But we teach
it. Very good, exactly. You have to be teachable. Meaning, if you want to cultivate knowledge, right, you're setting out with the goal, I want knowledge. This is the list of knowledge. Knowledge means, already we've last time we heard the point, that knowledge has to be received. This is the Vedic system, descending process. Knowledge has to be given, it has to be received from someone who possesses knowledge. In other words, you need a teacher. But a teacher can only teach if, as Rex is saying, you are teachable. Meaning, if a student comes into class thinking, I already know everything there is to know about the subject, then any teacher is going to have a very hard time trying to teach it. You have to first accept the idea that, yes, I am lacking something. I am lacking in knowledge. This person can offer me something. I have something to learn. I have something to progress, to improve. And without this kind of humility, there's no use beginning the spiritual process at all. Yeah. Therefore, Krishna, in the, what is it, fourth chapter, he describes how to approach a spiritual master. And it's very crucial what he says there. He says, Tat vidhi pranipadena parikrishnena sevaya. He says, to approach a spiritual master, you do three things. Tat vidhi pranipadena. The first thing in approaching a spiritual master is pranipadena. You surrender. Come with the mood of surrender. Pranipada. Very nice word in Sanskrit. Pra means forward, ni means down, and pata means to fall. Come forward and fall down. Come to the feet. Offer your obeisances, dandanas, like we do in front of the deities. It's called pranipata. The word is so, in Sanskrit, all the words are so nice that you can learn each part, mean something. Pra, forward, ni, down, pata. Completely describes the mood and the activity. So in both body, mind, and words, all three, you come forward and fall down before the Guru. Pariprashnena, again, means ask with humility. You question the spiritual master, but with humility, with a mood to learn, not with a mood to questioning for the sake of questioning. Just display your intelligence. Look at how smart I am. I can ask difficult questions. Pariprashnena, questions. Pari means around. You ask questions in a gentle manner, not with arrogance. Who do you think you are? Where is God? Not like that.
It seems like if you can't get the other part, the need for the approval or the honor from other people out of your system, get yourself out of the way, then your spiritual journey, the intent of your spiritual journey is futile because you're doing it for self-gratification, not in order to get it.
Okay, so there's the big point number two. Why spiritual life cannot begin without humility? First, Rex said you have to be teachable. But secondly, as Darlene is saying, you have to be able to remove the focus from yourself, right? Get yourself out of the way. So far, for millions of lifetimes, we've always kept ourselves in the center of the universe. It's me, it's all about me. But spiritual life means that you begin to realize, that it's not all about me, it's all about Krishna. Krishna's God is at the center. But unless you have the ability to remove the focus from yourself and say, no, it's not about me. It's actually, I'm very, very insignificant. I'm very small. It's all about Krishna. It's all about God. How can you even begin on the spiritual path? So, two very nice reasons. Why else is humility so crucial, listed number one on the list.
The humility brings about service?
Yes, engagement is a process of devotional service. So, devotional service cannot begin, as we were saying, without humility. But also, the process cannot continue. This mood of service, this is the third item I was coming to. Tadvirti pranipatena parikrashina sevaya. You must serve the spiritual master. And so you cannot perform service without humility. The attitude of service, as it's called. Service is not just a matter of doing it, but the attitude of service. I'm doing this for the service of God. It's my position as a servant. Jivira Surupai Krishna Nitya Das. This is my eternal position as a servant. So therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shikshastika prayers, he left 8 verses in which he summarized the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And the third one of these verses is very, very important, very nice, very simple, in which he describes what humility means. He says, Janarabhisunichena tarurabhisarishuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari Janarabhisunichena tarurabhisarishuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari It's a very, very beautiful verse. Actually, when I was in Tirupati, last year, they were playing this over the loudspeakers in the main temple, the Shikshastika. Very beautiful. At first, I didn't recognize it. They were singing it in South Indian style, even this particular South Indian singing style for Sanskrit verses. And we were standing in line for it. Besides Lord Balaji, there's another temple of Varahadi nearby. It was a Kundan. We were standing in line for that, and I was just listening at that nicely. I thought, oh, these verses sound very familiar. Like that. They weren't singing in this tune, but it was the South Indian style. It's, like Shubha Lakshmi does the Venkatesh, like Suprabhata and like that. That's that. They say, oh, this is Shastra, he's listening. Very nice, very good. And they universally appreciated these verses. So he says in this third verse, Trinada Pisuni Chena Tarora Pisahishuna Amanina Manadena Kirtani Sadahari. When one is able, he says, one should, the goal is to chant the holy names of the Lord, to glorify the Lord 24 hours a day. Kirtaniya sadahari. One should always be continuously chanting the holy name, glorifying the Lord. But this is only possible, he says, in two conditions. He says, trina api suni chena, that when one considers oneself lower, one becomes more humble, then trinadapi, then a blade of grass, then a straw rather on the street, trina. One considers oneself more humble, lower than a blade of grass on the street, and taro api sahishna. One is more tolerant than the tree, taro api sahishna. Amanina, one is not hoping for any respect to oneself, and manadena, ready to give all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name constantly. So Prabhupada here, he's saying that this is what humility means. He's describing amanina, freedom from the desire to be honored by others. If you see, in this mature world, everyone, all of us, we go around with this subtle desire, this hope, that let me be considered well in the society I live in. We all think, let me be respected by my friends, let me be considered well by my colleagues at work, let me be loved by my family. In every circle we operate, let me be considered well. Some person, I forget who it was, some famous person, he defines success. What is success? He said, success is to be considered highly by persons who matter the most to you. So in your circle, in your little group, your colleagues, to be considered highly by them, this is what success is. And basically he's right, in the material world, this is what success means, that we're considered highly by others. And all of us, we're looking for this honor, this prestige. In spiritual life, this is what I describe as one of the subtle desires, subtle contaminations that are there in spiritual life. There's the gross material problems that we have to get over, like lust, anger, greed, envy, and these things, very heavy material problems, anarthas, they call them. But even when you get over these, even when you're beyond the gross problems, desire for meat eating, desire for illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, these types of things, and you purify yourself, still in the heart, these subtle qualities remain, three subtle problems. Desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. What is it? Lab, pratishtha, lab, and lab, pratishtha, and I forget the third one. Profit, adoration, and distinction. Profit meaning I want to get something out of the situation. This is very deep quality. Even when we come before God, we think, let me get something out of this encounter. I'm here, let me. This is so ingrained in us. Anytime we do anything, we meet someone, we have some friend, we're always, the mind is so cunning, so subtle, it's always thinking, what can I get out of this situation? What can I get out of it for me? And you see that people may be really good friends from high school and all this, but at some point or another, there's no use for each other in life. Their paths go different ways. And the friendship dwindles because neither side has any profit to be gained from the other. There's no lama. In Indian homes, everywhere, it would be outside the home, you know, it would be, the two things are shubha, lama. Shubha, lama. So profit, this desire for profit. What can I get out of the situation? You don't need the person, you get rid of it. So profit, desire for profit, desire for adoration. Let people worship. This is what Prabhupada is talking about. Manadin, amani. Let people worship me. Adoration. Everyone likes to be praised. Everyone likes to be glorified. And distinction. Let me stand out from the rest. I want to be number one in my field, or number two at least, top three, top five.
Yes, we say paro pratishta. Say paro pratishta, one of the adoration, distinction. Okay. One of the equivalent Sanskrit word pratishta in Telugu is same as pratishta in Sanskrit, but the other word is paro, we say paro pratishta, which is like distinction, adoration.
Nice. So you don't know Sanskrit. Let me stand. Let me get honor from others, and let me stand out from the group. Let me always be different. You see these advertisements for different companies. I forget which, maybe HPN. Like you see a whole crowd of different people, all dressed the same way in business suits, and then there's one guy in a red T-shirt or something, and it says, "Spot the person who uses HP technology." Or you find at big airports. Thousands of people, big picture, thousands of people rushing in the airport, different directions. And one guy who stands out, you know, the great business traveler with his suitcase, slow motion. Spot the one who flies United Airlines. Spot the one who's cared for by 100 million employees. So this, we want to get, or all these frequent flyer programs, higher and higher levels of prestige. United, Mileage Plus member, premier executive, gold, you know, platinum member, or hotels. Special. What makes you feel special? Distinction. I'm not like all of these economy class customers. Look, I've got this gold card. I'm different. I'm special. I got to board first. Look at them. They're all coming in the back. I boarded first. Distinction. I'm different. I'm superior to you. So this is very subtle. Even if we become free of the gross material qualities, material problems, desire for gross sense enjoyment. These subtle qualities are still there, and they're very difficult to get rid of. You find even great spiritual leaders fall prey to this desire of following, of distinction. That let people know how great of a saint I am. I hope people see how many rounds I've chanted, how nicely I've chanted. Even great saints, when they fall down, it's because of this desire for distinction, for adoration. So it's something that's very, very, very difficult to get rid of. Therefore, amanina manadena says, this humility means being ready to offer all respect to others and yet not expecting any respect in return. This is something very, very difficult to do. If someone comes and spits in your face, are you ready to bow at his feet? This is the type of thing. Jesus Christ was a very good example of this. He has so many statements in this saying, of turning the other cheek and offering first. Someone slaps you on one cheek, and you turn the other cheek. Allow him to slap on the other cheek. So, amanya, you're not designing it for any respect for yourself. And yet you're ready to give all respect to others. Slap this cheek. Amanya. Or like nice examples of Nityananda Prabhu and Kailas Thakur. Lord Chaitanya told them, go from ghare ghare diya mage bhiksha, bolo Krishna, bhajo Krishna, purush Krishna, shiksha. Lord Chaitanya gave them the instruction. Nityananda Prabhu said, ghare ghare diya, go house to every house, visit every house, mage bhiksha, and beg from them this item in charity. What should you ask them? Bolo Krishna, bhajo Krishna, puru Krishna, shiksha. Please, my dear sir, chant the name of Krishna, worship Krishna, and teach others about Krishna. Go house to house and beg people to chant the holy name. So literally, they would go from house to house, and they would fall at people's feet and say, please chant the name of the Lord. Please chant the name of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, he says in one lecture, he says very nicely, he says, this is what devotees must do in order to bring people to Krishna consciousness. You go to a very rich man, a very proud man, a very elevated man in society, and when you see him, you fall at his feet and you say, my dear sir, you're so intelligent, you're so wealthy, you're so beautiful, you have so many good qualities. Very funny, he says, you go to him and you praise him in this way. He said, now you fool, give all this up and chant the holy name of the Lord. He said, he says you have to be ready to offer respect. You have to, even people who may not be deserving of this respect, be ready to offer respect. And then try to give them this knowledge. So Nityananda Prabhu said that they would go house to house like that. And at one point, they were going from house to house like this. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the street, they saw a big commotion. Lots of people gathered around, shouting and this and that. And so they asked him, what's happening? Huh? What's the kolahal? What's the noise about? And everyone said, oh, there's two gentlemen here. They're from prominent families, very elevated men. And yet they're misbehaving. Really, they're completely drunk and acting badly. This is what. So they're the famous. These are the famous Jagai and Malhar, very famous father. Two brothers who were from very high class Brahmin families, and yet complete debauchees, drunkards, women hunters, thieves, rogues, everything. And they said they're causing a commotion on the street, and therefore the crowds gather. So both Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur thought, if we can change these people, if we can change their hearts, then Lord Chaitanya's mercy and his fame will be spread everywhere. Everyone will see how powerful the Lord's mercy is, his ability to save the living entities. So let's target these individuals. So they go through the crowd and fall at the feet of these two drunkards and said, please chant the holy name of Hari, chant the holy name of Krishna.
Nityananda Prabhu said that when they were so polluted, if somebody saw that, they would take a bath in the Ganga without even taking their clothes. They had to do it immediately. So he said, what if they were so pure that when people see them, they will be purified up for them. So that was his subject.
Very, very sinful individuals. Very sinful. Like one time they wanted to have some fun, so they hid on the bank of the Ganges, and one young girl was bringing her grandmother to bathe in the Ganges, and they jumped out of the bushes and pushed the grandmother into the water, drowned her, took the girl, raped her, and then killed her as well. This is the type of thing they were used to doing on a daily basis. What we would call, the worst of the worst, real scum. So they fell at these people's feet and said, please just chant the holy name. And the holy name is so powerful, it can destroy so many volumes of sinful activities, change a person's heart. So they said, please chant. But naturally you can imagine what kind of response this got from them. Drunkards like that. They got very angry and said, go away, we don't want you, just leave. But they kept begging them, please chant the holy name, please. And finally, the two of them got really enraged. And Madhai, the older brother among the two, he took his bottle and threw it at Nityananda Prabhu. It broke on his head and blood started pouring. And started shouting and screaming at him and threatening him. Said, leave, otherwise I'm going to kill you. Even then, Nityananda Prabhu Advaita Acharya still stayed at his feet, begging, please chant the name. In the meantime, the devotees, they saw what had happened, and they ran to Lord Chaitanya and told him, Nityananda Prabhu is bleeding, he's in pain, please come help. As soon as he heard this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he ran to the spot from where he was in the city. And when he saw Nityananda Prabhu's condition, he became extremely angry, and immediately called for his Sudarshan Chakra, Krishna's weapon that he calls in times of need, in times of distress. In other words, the Lord, he's willing to tolerate any kind of offense. The Lord is very merciful. But when there's an offense to his devotee, Krishna doesn't tolerate. Become very ferocious. So Lord Chaitanya, he had promised that in this incarnation, he would never pick up any weapon, he would not kill anyone. It is the most merciful incarnation of the Lord in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's delivering everyone only by his mercy. Yet, when he saw this happening to his devotee Nityananda Prabhu, he couldn't help it. It's just kind of an old habit of the Lord. Whenever there's a problem, it's kind of he calls the Sudarshan Chakra. It's an old ingrained habit. So it's kind of out of habit, just call the Sudarshan Chakra. And then Nityananda Prabhu, from falling at the feet of these demons, then he moved and fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya. And he said, please, have you forgotten why you came to this earth? You promised not to use any weapon in this incarnation. Please don't kill these people. Rather deliver them. Change their heart. If you were to kill these two individuals, you'd have to kill practically everyone in this age. Everyone here is like Jagai and Madhai to some degree or another. Everyone today engages in the activities they were engaging in. Intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, to some degree or another. So please, in this age, don't kill anyone. Kill their material desires, kill their ignorance by the weapon of your mercy. And as the devil was begging Lord Chaitanya, when the two brothers, Jagai and Madhai, they saw this, it completely melted their hearts. Even their stone-like hearts, right? They had the heart to do horrible things like I described. Even in that drunken condition, when they saw, first they saw the Sudarshan Chakra, the ultimate weapon the Lord has to kill anyone. And that weapon is super, super frightening. And Sudarshan Chakra is actually said to be the personification of time itself. The rotating wheel of time comes in the form of this chakra. When you see this weapon, there's nothing that can stop it on this earth. Extremely frightening. So on one hand, they turned completely pale looking at this weapon. And then they saw death itself, right? Imminent death coming. And then they saw someone pleading on their behalf. Who was pleading on their behalf? Not some bystander who felt sorry for them. Not their mother, not their father. Please forgive my sons, you know, they're foolish. The very person whom they had threatened to kill. To see that person begging for their protection. This, even their hard hearts, this melted. And they fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and said, please, you know, we deserve to be killed. This is the only way we can be saved. Because we, from all we've done, you just kill us. This is, we deserve this. And they started crying at the feet of Lord. And then Lord Chaitanya, he said, his anger subsided. He left the chapter book. And he said, only because of the mercy of Nityananda, only because of his mercy, today you still live. I let you go. But I let you go on one condition. One condition. You have to promise never to commit these sinful activities again. This time I forgive you, but you cannot repeat this ever again. You must live completely pure lives. And to fulfill, to solidify his promise, the Lord, he embraced both Jagga and Madha. And it said that they had so many sinful activities, these Jagga and Madha, that Lord Chaitanya, his natural complexion was golden. And when he embraced him, for that moment, he turned black. Black like coal. All these sinful activities he had to deal with. It said that Chitragupta, the assistant of Yamaraj, who's his accountant, keeps track of all our sins and all our, you know, activity, said even he ran out of paper, became completely exhausted, lost count, couldn't keep track of the sins that these people had committed. So anyway, the point was, this is an example of Vaishnava humility. Humility and compassion, both of these things go together. The humility that you can improve and take that. To be able to, amanina manade is the point. They're ready to offer all respect to others, even people who are completely undeserving of their respect, and yet demanding no respect from them. Receiving rather blows from them, and still being able to give respect to them. So this is the quality of humility. And this type of humility, when Krishna sees this humility, Krishna is very, very impressed. He says, this person is a bona fide recipient, qualified recipient. He has the right to achieve devotion to me when he sees that kind of humility. Because in the material world, the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So whoever climbs to the top in the material world always wants to get to the top. He's actually, in the reflections at the bottom. It's like you have a tree and on the bank of a lake, and you have the reflection on the lake. So you see in the reflection that the roots are on the top and the branches are at the bottom. So this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. In other words, in this material world, if you try to climb to the top, on top of everyone else, then when you flip to the reality, then the top of the material world would be at the bottom of the spiritual world. And those who could regard themselves at the lowest point in the material world, they are considered the highest in the spiritual world. I don't have watch time here. What's the time?
8.
I was just thinking that even if you try to, try to be humble, then just the thought of, thinking that, oh, I'm humble, that itself is contrary to the idea.
Yeah. Actually, this is the easiest way to make someone proud, make someone very proud, is to say, oh, Prabhu, you're so humble. You're very humble. Yeah. It's like, so the easiest way to make that is to say, yeah, well, what can I say? I guess I have to agree. I don't want to say it, but it's kind of true, isn't it? So, so that's true. Humility is not an artificial or cheap thing. Humility does not necessarily mean that one could ask and say, okay, this is humility. It means we're always, you know, very meek and can't say anything. And humility doesn't mean that you have no spine. This is not what humility means. That you're always going around, you know, hunchback, can never stand up straight, and can never get words out of your mouth because you're so afraid. Always putting yourself down. Humility does not mean lack of self-esteem. Sometimes people, they listen to this description and say, you're just describing someone who's got no self-esteem. And this is a psychologically diseased condition. Because so many people go to psychologists, therapists, that they've got self-esteem problems. The therapist will tell them, look, you're not worthless. Right? You have some value. So no, humility doesn't mean lack of self-esteem. It doesn't mean you have no spine. It doesn't mean you can't do anything, you can't say anything. Right? This is not what humility means. Humility basically means that humility is founded on a honest and accurate assessment of who one is. Right? Humility is founded on this quality of honesty. That you're honest, you honestly understand what your position is. So if, for example, Krishna has given some person a particular talent, you're a very good cook, for example. Humility does not mean that anytime someone asks you to cook, say you come to the temple and someone says, can you please cook for the Lord, make some sweets or like that. You go, oh no, I'm such a horrible cook, I can't cook Krishna through my cooking, how can I cook for him? The devotees, I can't cook, this is terrible. No, that's not humility. Because what is that doing? Is you have a talent to cook, but you refuse to acknowledge it. What does that mean? What's the end effect? That you could serve Krishna with your talent. You have the opportunity to render service to Krishna, and yet you are not rendering service. Right? So humility is keeping you from devotional service. That cannot be humility. Right? Humility is a quality that it helps one to achieve devotional service, is an aid on the spiritual path. If it keeps you from doing devotional service, then that's not humility. Humility means an accurate assessment, an acknowledgement of what one's assets are and what one's lacking are, faults are. Whatever assets a person has, a person recognizes, yes, okay, some or other, I have these abilities, right, these talents. But this is the crucial point. I'm not the source of these talents. They're not coming from me. It's not because I'm great. Krishna is so kind that he's given me these abilities. And therefore it becomes my duty to use these abilities in the service of the person to whom they belong. This body and all the talents I have belong to Krishna. Therefore, true humility means taking whatever one has and utilizing them in the service of Krishna. For example, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master told him to preach in English, preach in the West. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada had a very good command of the English language. He had the ability, he had the determination, the daring spirit, and his spiritual master saw this. Now, if Prabhupada said, no, Gurudev, I'm useless, no, I don't know any English actually, I can't. If he had just, false humility, falsely put himself down, then he would never have come to the West to preach. But no, he recognized, my spiritual master wants me to do this, and some or other, Krishna has given me the ability to do this. He saw that Krishna is giving success, I have the ability to do this. So he utilized that ability in Krishna's service. But he always understood, this ability is coming through the mercy of my spiritual master. It's the empowerment, the power from the order of my spiritual master that is giving me the ability to do this, not on my own strength. He was writing this on the ship coming to America. He wrote two very beautiful prayers on this ship, one called Markine Bhagavad Dharma and the other a prayer to the lotus feet of Krishna. Two nice prayers. And in that one he says, some or other, he says, my Lord, you have brought me to this place. He's coming to the Boston skyline, and you can see the sky, this huge material empire, tall buildings, and so much opulence. And he's saying, this land is covered by worlds of passion and ignorance. And people are not in the least interested in the message I have to offer. Yet some or other, you have brought me here. I don't know why, but you must have some reason. You must, he says, you must have something for me to do, some function for me to fulfill. Otherwise, why would you have brought me here at this advanced age? Now, if you desire, you can make my speaking, my words, suitable for their hearing. You can make my words suitable for my audience. Otherwise, he says, I have no ability to communicate to these people. I don't understand their culture. I don't understand where they're coming from, what they like, what they don't like. All I'm coming with is the message I've received. This is what I've come to give them. If you desire, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. These are his exact words. You can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. So, in other words, he's remembering, he's acknowledging. Yes, Krishna sent me here, he's giving me some ability, but this ability is 100% dependent on Krishna. If Krishna wants, he can take it away instantly. If he wants, he can give it to me. And therefore he says, Nachao Param Nachao Shayate. He said, therefore, O Lord, make me dance as you like, O Lord, make me dance. Five times he says, make me dance. I am a puppet in your hands. Make me dance as you like. In the last verse he says, I have no knowledge, and I also have no devotion. Yet somehow or other I have received this name, Bhakti Vedanta. Bhakti means knowledge, Vedanta. Bhakti means devotion, Vedanta means knowledge. But I have neither knowledge nor devotion. Somehow or other I have received this name, Bhakti Vedanta. Now, if you so desire, Nama Sarthakakari, you can make the purport, the meaning of this name come true. You can actually give this name meaning. So far it's just a title. But if you so desire, you can give this name meaning. And then he signs it, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So you see, this is nice what humility means here, what an example. On one hand he's saying, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar. And on the other hand, he had so much confidence that he was ready to cross the ocean and start this movement. In other words, this is the point. Humility here does not mean groveling, crawling on the floor. Because if Prabhupada was doing that, no one would come to listen to him. When he gave lectures, he spoke strongly. He cut through people's ignorance. And he told people on their face, you're fools and rascals. Right? And people accepted it. They listened. So in that sense, he was very bold, very arrogant. He had full confidence. But what was that boldness, what was that confidence based on? It wasn't based on a sense of personal capability. He wasn't confident in himself. I've got so much ability, I can do it. He wasn't bold because he thought, oh, I'm such a big man. No, he was confident because he was confident in his master. He was confident that Krishna will help me, Krishna will protect me. And that's where his confidence came from. So at the same time, he could be humble and at the same time bold. These are qualities that are not very often seen when you put together. Usually when you find bold people, courageous people, they're usually very proud, very arrogant, like warriors. Very courageous, they go into battle. But at the same time you talk to them, super proud. Or you find very humble people, they can't accomplish anything in life because they're so, can't assert themselves. These two qualities, very difficult to come together. But this is what true humility means. Because it's founded on a true assessment of oneself. And what does a true assessment of oneself mean? That you realize that I am a servant of Krishna. And all my power and all my strength and all my abilities come from Krishna. That's the basis of this humility. And then what lackings one has, right? The abilities you realize, they're all coming from Krishna. And whatever lackings you have, you understand, well, I'm imperfect, my qualities are less, it's okay. Whatever less I have, you accurately assess both sides. Your good qualities and your imperfections. Try to improve on the imperfections, and give the credit of the good qualities to Krishna. Any other questions? So much can be said on humility.
The other thing that you mentioned, that you should not see yourself in the center, but Krishna in the center. I think that is also very, that's a very good point, because then you can think that, so whatever you're doing is not for yourself, you know, but, so it's like not thinking low of yourself, but only thinking about Krishna.
Yes.
Right? So.
Yes, that's a very, very nice point, actually, a very good point. Devotional service as a whole, as a process, is a positive process. Means devotional service is not built on negative pulling down of the material world or yourself, but rather a positive attachment or appreciation to Krishna. So in other words, the same thing goes for humility. And this is a nice point. That humility is not based on a putting down of oneself, but rather on seeing oneself as a servant of Krishna. So it's not about hammering yourself into the ground, right? But rather seeing your proper position at the lotus feet of Krishna. So because this is a very nice point you brought up. It's very say someone is very humble and he's constantly putting himself down, saying, "I'm like this, I'm horrible, oh Prabhu, I'm so terrible, I'm so low, you know, this and that." What is he talking about constantly? What is he thinking about constantly? Himself, right? He's still in the center. This is what's called false humility. He's still got himself in the center. "I'm so low, I'm so terrible, oh I can't do it, oh please forgive me, oh." This is all about me, you know? It's actually some kind of a backwards satisfaction you get from feeling pathetic and feeling incapable of. I'm hopeless. But it's all about me still, right? And devotional service means it's about Krishna. So humility doesn't mean putting yourself down, but seeing yourself as a servant of Krishna. It's the positive flip side of that. And therefore, again, in Shikshastra, Lord Chaitanya prays, it says, "Ainanda tanuja king karam patitan maam vishnaya maam udam kripaya tava vada pangaja sthita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya." It says, "Ainanda tanuja king karam patitan maam vishnaya ainanda tanuja, O Sanatana Maharaj, king karam patitan maam vishnaya maam udam. This servant of yours has some or other, patitam maam vishme bhavam buddha, somehow or other, I've fallen into this ocean of your existence, bhavasaga. Now, kripaya tava pada pankaja sthita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. Now, kindly pick me up and place me as one of the atoms of dust at your Lord's feet. Not even place, think of me, regard me as one of the atoms of dust. So that's, he's largely demonstrating what true humility is. That conception, I am a servant of Krishna. And what does that mean? I am a servant of Krishna? That my life is dedicated towards serving Him. So humility is an active lifestyle. Right? Humility is a life of active and bold service toward Krishna. It's not a state of passive self-despondency. Self-pity and groaning. It's a state of active service, of determination in Krishna service. Always remembering, I am a servant of Krishna. I'm a dust, a particle of dust of the Lord's feet of Krishna.
And one follow-up point on that is that the devotee further thinks that I'm the servant of Krishna.
Yes, yes.
Even I cannot be a servant of Krishna directly.
That's very nice also. That even the devotee even thinks, how can I serve Krishna directly? Krishna is so wonderful, he's so great. Rather, let me be the servant of one who is trying to serve Krishna, of the servant of Krishna. So all the Vaishnava acharyas, all the great teachers, this is their mood. They're asking servant of the servant, not. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, he says the same thing. Gopi bhartu padakamaleo dasa dasa. My constitutional position is that I'm the servant of the servant of the master of the gopis. In other words, Krishna, he's the Supreme Lord. His actual servants, those who are able to please him, are the gopis, Shrimati Radharani, and his dearmost servants, gopis, selfless devotees. Let me be the servants of their servants. It's in my mood. In the same way that in the spiritual world, in the mature world, one who is the lowest is the highest. One who is attempting, it's like in the mature world, see, everyone's trying to climb to the top, climb up the greasy pole. Everyone's trying to climb. The corporate ladder is called, isn't it? Corporate ladder. Means you step, you go on top, you climb on top, and in the process, you step on so many heads to get to the top. This is the nature of the mature world. Everyone's trying to be number one to get to the top. And as you know, there can only be one number one, right? One person at the top. So in order to get there, you have to end up stepping on everyone's head. This corporate ladder is basically made of the heads of your fellow employees. Just like this. You're climbing. In every field of material life, everyone's trying to get to the top. In the spiritual world, everyone's trying to climb down the ladder as low as they can possibly get. So someone's at the bottom rung, you climb down and try to get under them. Everyone's trying to squeeze under the next person. Climb down the spiritual ladder as far as you can. Because the more servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, the more times you move, the more times you, the dearer you are to Krishna, actually, the closer you are to Krishna. This is the amazing paradox of the spiritual world. The farther you are down the chain of service, the closer you are to Krishna. Because Krishna, he is known, he is approached by service. He is known, he is approached by humility. That's how Krishna is accessed. So the more you are in the mood of service, the more people you have to serve, the more access you have to Krishna. Therefore, King Kulashekar, one of the elders of South India, he has a very beautiful verse in which he says, he prays to the Lord, please regard me as the servant of your servant. It says, tad vritya vritya paricharaka vritya vritya vrityasya vritya itimam smaralokana. This word vritya means servant. He's saying, please consider me the servant of the servant of the servant. I think seven times he says, tad vritya vritya paricharaka vritya vritya vrityasya vritya itimam. Six times. Smaralokana. Oh Lord, smaralokana, consider me, regard me as the servant of 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 your servant. He actually takes the trouble to mention six times this word servant. That's how far down the line he wants to be. So nice one.
So what's wrong with just being equal with everyone? Like, some people they say that you say you should, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says be humble in the bay and grass and tall from the tree. Then I told this one person, and that person responded and said, well, I don't consider myself any greater than anyone, nor do I consider myself any lower than anyone. I'm just equal with anyone. Yeah. After all, God created everyone equal, and it's even said in the Bible. So then why consider myself lower than anyone else? Mm. Why not?
And it's said in the Bible and the Declaration of Independence. Oh. We build human rights. All men are created equal. It's simply because, according to the Vedas, equality is not possible. Equality is actually a myth. Not in the material world and not in the spiritual world. There's no such thing as equality. Everyone is at a different level and everyone is serving in a different way. There can be no equality. The only way there can be equality is if everyone's absolutely the same. And the way Krishna has created this world, the way Krishna has created all of us, the living entities, we are all individuals, and each one of us is different. And as long as you have difference, you cannot have equality. Just like the two of you sitting there. Right? Now you can say we're equal, both of you. But how can you be equal? Look at all the differences you have. He's taller than you are, right? So is no equality there. You're smarter than he is, right? You've got got longer hair. You have glasses, she doesn't. So where is the equality in this world? Equality is a myth that is created by us. It's actually a myth. Even in the spiritual world, everyone is working under the direction of someone else. One gopi is assisting another gopi in assisting Srimati Radha in serving Krishna. One counterpoint is helping another counterpoint. Everyone in the spiritual world, everyone is working under someone, he's being directed by someone, and everyone is teaching someone else. This is the actual way the world works. If you look at how the world is in reality, everyone is receiving from someone, learning from someone, and everyone is giving to someone. Everyone is a student and everyone is a teacher, regardless of who you are. Everyone looks up to someone and everyone looks down at someone. This is the nature of the world. You can find the lowest life, real Dija, and you will still find the lowest person in the world, you think he's got no possible good qualities, and you will still find someone who looks up to him, who adores him, who thinks he's the greatest person in the world. This is the fact, this is the reality of the world. But we create this myth that we're all equal. Equality is a myth, completely a myth. There's always differences, there's always variety, there's always higher and lower. But the point is that doesn't have to be a bad thing. In the material world, we hate inequality. Because what that means is we have to bow down to someone, we have to be less than someone. No one wants that position of being less than someone. Why doesn't that person consider himself lower than anyone? He doesn't like it. You don't want to be controlled by anyone else. Because in the material world, everyone is working from selfish desire. So, in other words, as soon as you put yourself subordinate to another person, what happens? That person tries to exploit you. He sees it, he takes advantage of the situation. He says, aha, this person is less than me. Right? Let's exploit him. Let's get what I can from this person. He's a captive audience. I'll get what I can. And so that person becomes frustrated, becomes angry. And so he goes around looking for someone whom he can exploit. Right? Someone who's less than him. This is why we hate inequality in the material world. This is why we're so desperate for equality. But in the spiritual world, This type of relationship is not based on selfish desire. Everyone is trying to help everyone else serve Krishna. So the point is, when you see someone else serving Krishna very nicely, you become happy. Why? Because you realize Krishna is happy by this person's service. So when Srimati Radharani sees that this particular gopi can satisfy Krishna by her nice flower garlands or nice whatever she does, nice music, she sees Krishna likes it, then instead of thinking, oh, it's terrible, I should be the one, you know, that I can make better flower garlands, not like that. She says, oh, this person is pleasing Krishna, this gopi, let me bring her to Krishna. Krishna's pleased by this. So she sees someone who's expert at something, and she wants to help that person. In the material world, what happens? You see someone who's good at something, and the natural instinct is push him down, bring him down. So, I can be on top. In the spiritual world, you see someone good, and you think, how can I raise him higher? How can I raise him better? And this is the change in consciousness that we have to work towards in order to qualify to enter into the spiritual world. When we start thinking like this, we see someone who has good qualities, and we think, wow, how wonderful, Krishna's given him good qualities. Let me somehow engage these qualities in Krishna's service, not try to bring them down. And we see someone less, and instead of feeling gratified, aha, look at him, you know, makes me feel better, so much better. We think, oh, let me somehow help this person, bring him closer to Krishna. That's the nature of the spiritual world. That's the quality of the spiritual world.
And aren't spiritually we created equal? Like the soul is the same. Like, that's what we're telling about. The soul is spiritually the same.
Yes. We're equal in the sense that we're all equally have the ability and potential to serve Krishna. In our destination, where we're all heading, and our potential to achieve that destination, we're all equal. But there's still variety in how we actualize that potential, how we actually express ourselves. In our relationships with other individuals, there will always be difference, inequality. Although each person is equally capable of pleasing Krishna. See, that's Krishna's the center of this equality. He's all created as equal. It's true, all men are created equal. But on the fact is, Krishna has made everyone equal. In other words, we all have equally the ability and the potential to have a relationship with Him. This is the point of equality, because Krishna has created them. So it's not that He made one person unable to achieve Him and the other person able to achieve Him. Not like that. Everyone's able to achieve Krishna equally. That's the pattern of equality. But the way in which that person has a relationship with Krishna, the nature of that relationship, the way he expresses himself in that relationship, that is completely unique to that individual. That's what makes us an individual. This is why we're not all the same. We're not one person.
Similar and equal, are they same terms?
Yes. Similar and equal.
Right. I mean, we're talking about sometimes it's similarity and equality is more quantifying.
Yes. Similar and equal are different.
Yeah. Like it's similar. Everyone has the same opportunity rather than, but not same quantity maybe.
Yes.
That's what we always say, you know, quantitatively, qualitatively. And,
yes.
You know, and equality again, based on the context, I mean. You speak about some, okay, it's equally spread everywhere, but you know, someone may want to receive this much, and if you put one plant, it will burn, other it survives.
Right.
I mean, there's equal opportunities, but the way you react to it may be different.
Yes.
I don't think equal in itself will exist independently. It should be with in relation to, you know, something, as you said, pleasing Krishna or
yes.
something.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're all similar in our opinion. Equal is a very very strong word, actually. I mean, equal, if you mathematically, means actually the same thing.
Yeah.
Means identical, you know. So to say we're all equal is basically an impersonalist position. It's a Mayavad position. To say I'm equal to you means we're actually the
both
same person.
Both become zero. So
yes.
Equal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No individuality. No. So similarity is a better word. It's what you like.
But then it is also said, right, that everybody is like God is not partial and He is the cause of all causes. Then why are we different?
I was just thinking of this, you know, just like 30 seconds ago I was thinking of this point and then I lost the point after I finished commenting on that. I forgot that it's very important. I was going to say, even Krishna, he admits that he's not equal to everyone. There's this verse in Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu nametreshu asti nabhiya. Very famous. He says, I am equal to all living entities. No one's my favorite. I don't hate anyone, and I don't consider anyone my friend. No one's my enemy, no one's my friend. Samoham sarva bhuteshu, I am equal to all living entities. He says this in the first half of the verse. And then in the second half, he can't resist. He says, but samoham sarva desha name desha sti nabhiya. How does it go? Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai deshu jatyam. That, but those who worship me with devotion, I am never lost to them and they are never lost to me. It says, but those who worship me with devotion, ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya. This word tu means but. So he's saying, first he said, I'm equal to all living entities, and everyone, yes, this is what the way God's supposed to be, you know. God's equal to everyone. But then Krishna, he can't even wait, a half a verse. But the persons who are my devotees, I like them, especially. They're my favorites. It's natural, because why? Krishna's a person, right? So you like everyone, I'm equal to everyone. But if your family member's there, your son is there, your parents are there, naturally, there'll be special affection. His devotees, for them, Krishna's everything. So naturally, they're completely dependent on Krishna. So naturally, Krishna, he feels special responsibility towards them. It's just like the example is given of a king. A king is said to be the father of all his subjects. So he's supposed to care and look after his subjects like a father, called praja. Praja means literally progeny. They're all his children. Yet, the prince in the palace, the Rajkumar, his own children, the prince and the princess, he looks after them with some special care. Meaning he's looking after everyone, but the general populace, he looks after indirectly through his agents, the ministries, the different cabinets and like that, and you know, the agencies of the government. But for the prince and the princess, he's looking after them specially, right? When someone in the country becomes hungry, he says, okay, you know, food relief agency should go in and should feed them, and let them open my my warehouse or storehouse of grains and feed them, you know, like that. He gives orders and things. But when the prince or the princess feel hungry, then he brings the food personally to them. He takes them to the kitchen and says, what do you want to eat? You know, he brings them personally. Yeah. So he's taking care of both. In that sense, he's equal. He's taking care of the prince and the other. But naturally, his own children, some personal, he's personally looking after. So Krishna says the same thing. I look after everyone. I'm equal to everyone. But I personally look after my devotees with my own hands because they're very dear to me. So even Krishna cannot maintain this idea of equality for very long. Because it's natural. Anyone who is a person, anyone who is an individual, they will naturally have this special feeling. Only someone who is impersonal, only a stone can be equal to all living entities. You see a stone, completely equal. It'll lie there no matter who comes. Whether it's an animal or a human being or anyone. But anyone who has some feelings, from a dog to a human being to a demigod, they have some affection. And affection means that you have some favoritism. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.